Hello, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Remarkable Women. What can you expect from this podcast? Well, for the last 3 years, we've been talking to women all over the world actually about what they want to create in their lives and what's holding them back. And consistently, the feedback we're getting back is, I really want to make a difference. Women are telling us that all the time, almost to like 98%, I think our last figure is showing that women want to make a difference in the world. And yet, they're holding back because they're afraid of some of the costs that they think might happen as a consequence. So typically, women are afraid of cost to their health. Am I going to burn myself out? Am I going to work too hard? They're typically afraid of working in environments that they're not happy to be part of and compromising their values. They're afraid of running out of money. And I think we'll talk about that with today's guest, I'm guessing at some point. And they're afraid of damaging their relationships. So this sense of, if I have the impact I'm supposed to have in the world, what else has to be compromised as a consequence? And so our work is about helping you to navigate those things, because we believe you can make a difference in the world and that we can work around those costs and find you a different way of living. And so every month we get together with you and we either talk to one of our existing Remarkable Women community or somebody outside of the community who's inspired us so much we want to be in conversation with them. And today we're talking to Lynn, who is part of the community and has been certainly working with me for some time now. And I'm so, so excited to have her with us and to be able to share her mission with you. So Lynn, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with what it is you want to create in the world. And I'm really excited about this because actually you fill a gap that we don't fill in Remarkable Women. But tell us what it is you're trying to create.
Well, if I was actually just trying to put it into the language that the people who are listening might understand, you're all about, you know, remarkable women. And I guess I'm all about remarkable mothers. And what that really comes down to is the fact that I just think we've come to a point where we're in a perfect storm of motherhood and careers and what we want and how we have it. And we've got ourselves thoroughly mixed up. And really, what I guess my big mission in the world is really to create a culture that actually goes beyond the policies and the kind of the day-to-day headlines of what you can expect in your career, and also the mindsets. You know, so much of this comes down to mindset, both of the organization and of individual talent. And that's just what makes my heart sing, just trying to make that happen for people.
And so you're specifically working with organizations who want to improve the way they work with women while they're on maternity leave or about to go on maternity leave or returning to work, and directly with women who are found out they're pregnant and are wanting to navigate that path with more ease than they might do without somebody like you with a different perspective on it. Tell us a little bit about your story, because like most of us, the reason you've got into this work is because your experience, you realized afterwards, could have been so different, right?
Yeah. Geez, it's quite hard to know quite where to start with that. And, you know, as you start talking to more and more people, you start whittling it down and whittling it down. And then yesterday, actually, something had reminded me of just how far away we can kind of come away from our own experiences, that you forget what it was like. And so every time I'm going to be coaching somebody who I know is in that postnatal period, particularly, I open up my old journals. I have to go back there. I have to get close to how I felt, because it's the easiest way for me to be able to bring out that empathy and to be as close to it as they are now, because it's something that, you know, I even experienced with my midwives and health visitors and the people who were involved in my care, that actually, you know, they weren't living it at that very moment. So they had sympathy, but not empathy. And that was a very important part of it for me. So I guess I'll try and do it relatively articulately. My background is that I have got three boys. They are now aged 10 and, nearly 10, 8 and nearly 4. And really, it was my third baby that made me take a different approach. So to give you context for that, I'll go back to baby number one. So A-type personality, coming out of a career that was deadline driven. It was lots of spinning plates. I was an account director in an ad agency. I had a kind of small team around me. It was a very young, vibrant agency. And at the time when I found out I was pregnant, they also were going through a slight issue of their own, and they were making people redundant. Newly married, and I didn't even know I was pregnant, to be fair to them, so they couldn't have. But one of the main accounts that they were losing was Toyota, who I used to be quite involved in their kind of branded retail marketing. At that point, I went freelance, and that was fine. But there's a really interesting thing in that. I was actually offered three other very senior jobs off the back of that redundancy. I took a redundancy compromise agreement. I knew I had outgrown the job. I knew I wanted another mission. I wanted mentoring. And I still turned down the other three jobs, two of which were my dream jobs. And why did I do that? I did that because I believed that you couldn't do at all. I believed that, well, I've never been pregnant before, so how do I know how I'm going to cope? One of them involved a commute. I was like, oh, can you even commute when you've got a big tummy? How does that work? I had all these questions.
And they're really legitimate questions, right?
Really legitimate questions. But I had nobody really to ask them to. And all I could see was I looked around and everybody I knew who had been very senior in their careers, who had gone on to have babies, started to play smaller. And I just thought that's what happened. And actually, having grown up in a family where my mum did have a very active role within the house, and it was quite 2.4 in that regard, I just assumed, well, that's just what's going to happen now. And so there was a kind of reluctant acceptance, but also just huge nervousness over this new chapter that was to come. So fast forward to when...
Let me just stop with that a minute. So yeah. in your mind, it was like, I've really made this decision that I love to have a child. Yeah. And now what I think I've got to do is put on the line two jobs that I would have been my dream jobs, because I can't have it all, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. So I actually started playing small before I even had my first baby. he was still in my tummy. But I went into the kind of the final stages of pregnancy, buoyant, quite excited, thinking it's going to be a lovely new chapter. It was coming up to Christmas time. It was really special. It was the first grandchild. There were lots of really exciting things for me to put my energies into. And that was super. What I wasn't quite prepared for was the reality of coming from that professional background, coming from being around other very engaging personalities and lots of life around you, and relative structure within that, to suddenly finding myself at sea. Because when you have your baby, it's not the birth for me.
It disappears behind you.
Here's the third one. Okay, bye. Hi and bye. Right, you can wave hello. Wave hello.
Hello. Always good to have an extra guest on the podcast.
I was worried that would happen. And so what actually happened was I had Will, my eldest, and it was all seemingly great. I had a good birth. We were very fortunate. He arrived. He was healthy. He was strong. There were lots of great things going, but actually I just wasn't prepared for the reality of suddenly becoming a mum. I wasn't prepared for the drive from calm to chaos. I wasn't ready for feeling like a beginner again. I wasn't ready for not knowing the answers. I wasn't ready for, I wasn't ready for the dip in mood. I wasn't ready for feeling rubbish at something. And it does that to you. You know, it does do that to you. And I had consumed all the books. I'd read all the magazines. I knew exactly what could and should happen. And I actually had also created such ridiculously high expectations for myself. Mm. You know, I will breastfeed till I get to this point. And come hell or high water, that's what I'm going to do, because that's the right thing to do. And everyone knows it's the right thing to do. So that's what I'll do. I had just never, ever taken into account who I was, even before Will arrived. But hindsight's a wonderful thing. So I then continued as I was, just thinking, I didn't think there was anything wrong. I just thought, oh, it's just meant to be this hard. It just is this hard. It's quite bleak and I'm tired all the time and he's not sleeping and the feeding isn't going so well. And I actually feel quite lonely, although I'm surrounded by family and friends. And actually, everyone else looks like they've got it together. You know, I would go to mother and toddler groups and I would be like, why do you look so okay? why is your hair washed? You know, there were all of these.
Did you ever vocalize that? Did you ever ask those questions?
Yeah. And, you know, we would all joke about it. We would all joke about it, but nobody would ever really dig deep into the truth. Nobody would ever dig deep and say, this is actually really hard. We just turned it into a little bit of a giggle. And that was fine, because when you were in company, it was fun and you could laugh about it and you could share. But it was in those in-between moments where you were like, oh, this is quite hard going. Yeah. Sleep did eventually come. We just had a baby who just wasn't a brilliant sleeper. It did eventually arrive and I started to feel a little less lost and a little brighter. And I remember thinking, well, you know what? If there's going to be any more, it's going to have to be soon, because I don't want to be getting myself all back to normal and then going back here again. And in between times, I had picked up some work. I was doing freelance work with my marketing background, and it was fine. It was okay. It wasn't setting me alight, but it was fine. And it was contributing back into the house, which was important to us at the time. So that kind of got us to a point where we're like, do we just go again? Do we not go again? And I grew up with an older brother. I'd always had a vision that I was going to end up like the Waltons or something. I was like, I'm going to have like five, and we're going to do church on a Sunday. We're going to do this, and we're all going to be outdoors climbing hills all the time
and singing.
I don't know who I thought I was.
Sounds like Maria von Trapp.
Yeah, exactly. I'll start singing now, but. So we did. We went ahead, and again, we were very, very fortunate. We didn't wait long. We didn't have a difficult time getting pregnant. It was, you know, quite quickly on. So we maybe had about, I think Will was about 11 months when we found out we were pregnant. And then the age difference between Will and Rory then ended up being about 17 and a half months.
So as a non-mother, I'm always in deep admiration of women who choose to have babies so close together, because I just think, surely you haven't forgotten what you've just been through. And I mean, is it not like that? I don't know. It's not my experience, right?
Do you know, Danielle, I think that the love that you feel is so intense and so deep that you actually don't question it. You just do it. You just do it. It's just... you just accept that parenting comes with its amazing moments, and then it comes with those harder moments. And you do take great joy from it. And actually, one of my biggest frustrations, you know, is that we all as parents, it's like we're scared to say, you know, I love being a mum, or I love this bit of being a mum, but I hate that bit of being a mum.
It's not okay to say that, really, is it?
No, it's not okay to talk about the bits you like and you don't like. I mean, we can joke about them, but nobody really knows quite how strong the depth of feeling can be in some of those spaces. Mm. And because they're not often discussed, I find with quite a lot of the people I coach, because they're not often discussed, it's like, it goes back to that whole thing with Brené Brown and shame. It's like, I can't admit that because it's shameful. Mm-hmm. And you're like, but actually admitting it makes it better for everyone, because we can all say, yeah, that really does push all my buttons.
And well, being the sense of, if there's a part of me that doesn't love this, then I'm not a good person, right?
That is exactly it. That's exactly it. And I definitely felt that with Will, and I felt it with Rory too. I remember when Rory was born and thinking, I will not get two babies in a row that were as difficult as my first baby. Number one, he's my second baby, so I've been here before and I've done it all. And number two, he'll have a different personality. He'll have his different likes and dislikes. He'll want to be held a different way from the way Will was held. And Will hated a sling. He might like a sling. There were all these different stories I told myself even before Rory was born about how this was going to be a much more positive experience all round. But I hadn't had anybody to say, you know, to talk to the first time around and say, actually, it wasn't all positive. You know, these were the things that were quite tricky. And therefore, I hadn't created a space where anybody could say to me, well, and if it's not, how are we going to cope with that? Mm-hmm. You know, what's in your toolbox? What are you going to learn from those moments? There was nothing like that. And so it was this whitewashing of, I should be so grateful to be a mom. And yes, it is going to be hard, But it's okay, because I know that there are these moments of joy in amongst it, because I've been there before, so it's going to be great. What I didn't really account for was that having my two close together, and then actually, you know, by the time we got number one sleeping through the night, the second one came along. I'd probably been up for about 4 or 5 months through the night with my bladder being pressed upon and treated like a jungle gym. And so you've got this sleep deficit anyway. Mm-hmm. And then baby comes and the sleep deficit is, you know, it just gets even bigger. Mm-hmm. And you know it's a phase and you know it's going to pass. But when you're in that place of exhaustion and everyone's telling you, well, that's just parenthood for you, nobody can really see how painful that is for you. And it's not this kind of, oh, I want to sleep. It's an obsession, because you know you need something to make you feel better. You just
and as an insomniac, or I'm certainly recovering now, I can really relate to that, because I think when you're carrying a degree of tiredness all the time that you just don't know. I mean, it's well and good to say this will pass, but you know, children can take a long time to build sleep patterns, right? So this will pass could be a year, it could be 3 years, it could be 4 years. You know, we're not talking next week everything will be fine. We're talking about a day-to-day energy management issue, right?
Well, that's it. And nobody tells you. Nobody tells you. They all say, oh, get your sleep in now before baby comes. Nobody tells you what that's actually going to look like or feel like. Mm-hmm. Nobody says to you, look, here are some great ways to make that feel less hard. Mm-hmm. You know, you've always spoken to me since I met you about what if this was easy. And that's now something I bring into every session when we're even preparing for the postnatal period. I'm a wee bit unusual in that, because of my experience, I don't just like to coach the career transitions. I like to bring in some of that knowledge that I have about postnatal. And one of the things that we do say is, you know, what if this was easy right now? You know, you've got a coachee who calls you and they're in tears because they're so tired and they didn't think it would be this hard. And who even are they anymore? And you're saying to them, it's okay, listen, you are in exactly the same place as hundreds of thousands of other women right now, this morning throughout the UK. The difference is you've got somebody on the other end of the phone here who can say to you, what if we could make this easy? What would it look like? Mm. And I wish I had had somebody to do that for me, because I made it hard. I really did, because the classic perfectionist mindset, that A-type personality, that achiever in you, turns into playing a game of whack-a-mole. You know, it's like, oh, the sleep wasn't so good tonight. Right, well, we'll do that today and that'll fix that. And then, that feed didn't go so well. What can I do to fix that? So you're just constantly playing whack-a-mole to make sure all these problems don't just keep popping up. Mm. And what I learned third time around was so different from that. But I guess I'm jumping a little bit of a chapter. What ended up happening with my second was the sleep deprivation. That's where we were. So as the sleep deprivation started to kick in again and I started to feel a little bit desperate again and just so tired, and I'm just a girl who needs her sleep, but I also wanted to be everything I could to this mum. You know, I used to say to my husband, you know, I kind of feel like I'm an earth mother who's not been given the skill set to be the earth mother. It's like my mind didn't match with my body, my ambition didn't match with who I was. And actually,
let's just pause on that for a minute, because yeah. I can imagine there are thousands of women out there who were desperate to have a child and then got one and went, oh my, I'm so ill-equipped for this. I'm not the one that should be doing it. Or why did I want this so much and then find myself so incapable of getting this right? I mean, you must find that's a classic story, really. Yeah.
Yeah. That's everyone. Mm-hmm. That's everyone. And you know, it's not because there is a way to get it right. It's because of the high expectations we've put upon ourselves. And because we're not slowing down enough, we're not planning in pregnancy for a start. We're not thinking about who we are before we go into birth and before we go into the postnatal period.
Because we're thinking about the baby, right?
Yeah, you're just thinking about baby, exciting, buy baby grows. Oh, I like this one. Oh, it's 70 pounds. You know, you're doing the prepping, the nesting. You're not thinking about preparing yourself.
And so when you're working with women, you're doing the work with them that says yes to baby and we're going to do all that work here, but what's going to happen on those days where you're knackered or those days where the child isn't eating or whatever? Because I'm just thinking about this now just as a regular human being, you know, And I know from when I was an aunt from a really young age, so I used to look after my nieces when they were newborns. And I can remember nights where, you know, my sister was just desperate to go out and I would take this newborn and she would just scream for like 2 hours, you know, and you'd be like, you want to be loving and caring, but the screaming's driving you insane. And so the mind, I'm guessing same as the work we always do, that mastering the mind and having you in a way with the tools there is the key part, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, 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 yes. It is. So much of it is about when we think about that acceptance versus resentment. Mums and dads beat themselves up when they are trying to console a baby who's been crying for 3 hours because it's, you know, it's new, the world is big and it's scary and it's, you know, and we also don't have the villages anymore. And so you're this one adult who is the whole world of security, of food, you know, the nourishment, the warmth, the comfort to this child, and it's all on you. And it's really hard to remember all the reasons why you're there when you're dealing with it in that moment. It's really hard to do that because when your reserves are down, it's hard to stay in that place of acceptance. So what happens is a lot of new parents go into that place of resentment's a really strong word. I would say it's more of a kind of feeling of I'm not coping.
Yeah, I was going to say
I'm struggling. I'm struggling with this. This is taking it all out of me. I'm exhausted. You know, these are a lot of the words that I hear.
And for your women, I'm guessing that's elevated because your women are used to achieving, right? So you're working with women who've had or in the process of being in a great career, who have been, you know, are known for making things happen, who suddenly find themselves to a large degree somewhat incompetent, right?
Yeah, you've got to learn to be a beginner at something again. You've got to learn to be a beginner. And not only that, you're learning to be a beginner again without having the big networks of people that we used to have. So, you know, we talk about this whole, it takes a village. And we have lost our villages. So we are all, globalization has been brilliant for our careers. And for our kind of our missions and the impact we want to have in the world, it's not been so good for our social structures because we are now having to make families out of friendships and out of the people we find around us rather than the traditional communities that we were all once part of. Where, you know,
for lots of women, once all the friends have sent, I mean, I've literally just become a great aunt again 2 days ago, and I'm making up for lots of women. I'm thinking, right, I need to send a gift for the baby and blah blah blah. But once you've sent the baby, grow, kind of job done to some extent, right? And then
I've lost you for a minute.
So here, I can hear you, but I can't see you. Can you hear me?
Sure, I can hear you again now.
Right.
Yeah,
don't worry, we'll edit this bit. So I'll just keep going, right? So I'm making up that for lots of women, when you talk about the village piece, that they're in an experience. So, you know, I'm thinking I've just become a great aunt 2 days ago, again, for the second time. How did I get this old? And, you know, my mind is like, right, I need to send a gift for the baby. And then I'm like, well, you know, after the first onslaught of a million baby grows and gift vouchers, I'm guessing most people then get on with their lives, right? And you're left with this pile of gifts, but no real network of support around you.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's some really interesting things that are kind of happening now. One of the things that I think is amazing that happens in the Netherlands is that there's an automatic thing called Kramzorg. And what that basically means is that a maternity nurse goes home with you from the hospital if you happen to have your baby in hospital, or if it's a home birth. But they have a system whereby you are nurtured as a mum in the same way that the baby is nurtured. So, you know, people are always sending gifts for the baby, asking how the baby is. Very rarely do they think about mum. Very rarely are they thinking, well, what can I do to help you today? You know, they come and visit and it's like, it's that old adage of, you know, yeah, well, I've just fed the baby, but now I'll get up and feed you. So a lot of the things that are in traditional villages still, which we don't have anymore, we're slowly starting to talk about them again. We're slowly starting to accept that actually, maybe there's a reason why countries where we still have confinement periods or fourth trimester traditions, you know, what happens when babies out the womb, but still not all that developed. When that happens, what are the traditions that we have in other countries that are helping to keep their postnatal mental ill health rates down? What is it that is helping with that? And so what we see in those cultures are communities coming together to mother the mother, so that all she has to think about is nourishing the child. And I mean, that doesn't necessarily need to mean breastfeeding. It can mean bottle feeding. It doesn't matter. But it's about the fact that people come together to support, because we were never meant to do this alone. We were never meant to do it alone. And yet here we are in a perfect storm this century.
As you're speaking, I'm thinking of like an untapped niche for, you know, some of these gyms are creating sleep pods now.
Yeah.
Some of the big ones in London. I'm thinking a lot of them have creches as well. So, I mean, how lovely would it be just to go in, say, take my baby for an hour, I'm off for a sleep, right? I mean, most people don't, and I know that's a real privileged thing. You've got to have the cash to do it. But to give, I'll never forget, Lynn, and I know this will resonate with you, doing an away day with a bunch of my team many years ago, all the kind of heads of department. And we had no budget. We were cutting budget. And so it was done in three places, in my house, in the village hall, and at a local old folks home. And when they came to my house, which they did in rotation, we'd set up my living room with blankets and pillows. And we were going to teach them, we were going to take them through a guided meditation. But one of the things I said as they came in was, this is your space to relax. And if you want to, you can sleep. And there was a guy in whose wife had just had a baby, I think like 2 months earlier. And he just looked at me and he went, are you kidding me? And I said, no, I'm dead serious. And he just went, yes, like this. And this guy just literally curled up in a corner and slept for an hour. And I'm pretty sure if you spoke to him about the power of that day, it would be that I gave him an hour to go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. There's two parts of what you've said there that are immediately sending off bubbles in my head. Like, I must say this and I must say that. I think that when it comes to the whole, like, see that idea of the sleep pod? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way I would have handed my baby over. Mm. As much as I was desperate for sleep, I struggled to accept help in any form. And I especially would struggle to accept help from somebody who didn't know my baby intimately.
Yeah. And how are you doing with teaching your women to take help?
So how do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Because we see this in our community, right? I mean, it's I would imagine it's just dialed up tenfold when there's a newborn baby involved. But most of the women that we work with, let me include myself in that, find it very difficult to ask for or receive help, yeah. Right? And you've now got a more extreme version of that. Are you finding that you can really work with women to shift that thinking?
Totally, because it starts from the beginning. It starts in pregnancy. See, what happens is you find out you're pregnant, or that you're going to have a baby come to the family. You know, I'm working with someone just now who's going through adoption, and you've got all these stories you've started telling yourself already. You've got all this inner dialogue, and that can start from really, really early on. So it can happen both within a work setting, and the unconscious bias starting to build up your thoughts about what your place is in the organization now. But it can also operate on a personal level of, this is what I expect of myself. This is how I'm going to play this out. I am going to be everything to this baby. This is my moment to shine. You know, this is what I was put on this earth for. Or, you know, if you were to take that the other way, you could say, well, wow, this is unexpected, but I'll do it like everything else. I'll give it my all and this baby will want for nothing. There are lots of shades within that, but let's take those two extremes. But what then happens if you don't interrupt that train of thought and say, okay, so let's talk about what life with baby is going to look like. What's your vision for where you want to be 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now? Because the things that you set up now and the things that you tell yourself now, what you give yourself permission to do and what you kind of break down the nonsense you're telling yourself, if you don't do that work now, what happens is you start to do what my gran used to call, you just make a rod for your own back. And it, you know, it's something that we all say laughingly, but actually it can be quite serious, because if you set up a system whereby you are everything to the baby and the baby is everything to you, you're going to find it very, very hard when it's time to go back to work. Because baby will not settle that easily with other people. If you have decided from the beginning, it's only me that's going to be feeding and I'm going to try and do 6 full months, or I'm going to do a year, or I'm just going to do 8 weeks, that kind of very inflexible thinking is what creates that system for overwhelm. Mm. So the more expectation you place upon yourself, the more you have built a system that will, that you can see yourself kind of ultimately failing.
I just wrote down there this inflexible thinking that sets you up for overwhelm. And it's so lovely that you're saying that, because and knowing you the way I do, I can see why that would be a thing that you would teach, right? Because this idea that I'm on mission, I've got to create this thing. And, you know, we see it with women, there's nothing to do with having babies. It's like, I've made this commitment, now I have to make it happen. And then just being totally bloody overwhelmed 3 months later because the path hasn't been linear, right? Yeah. And yeah. So what you're really saying with motherhood is, well, blimey, we got to acknowledge right now it's never going to be linear unless you strike the jackpot. And I do think there's the odd mother out there who does, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm so in awe of what happens for them, but it's not the norm, I don't think. And I don't think it's the norm for us. And so I'd love to hear you say that, because you're the sort of person who, you are a type A, you're ambitious, you're driven, you're going to spot this in other women because you did it yourself, right? And you could do it yourself again.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, something that you had just said there as well really resonated, where we talk about that type A and we have these expectations of, this is how I do things, this is who I am. We almost treat the baby, having a baby, as kind of, well, this is the next stage of my pretty perfect life. Mm. And it's not linear. It's not linear. But this is where it's not about maternity coaching through the transitions to just get you to come out whole. It's not that. It's, let's coach you through this whole journey so that actually you can come out of it with even greater self-awareness and even better leadership skills and even stronger resilience, because there is no teacher like a baby. There is no teacher like a baby. And, you know, so much of it, we are putting elastoplast on situations, you know, and it's not that I think flexible working is amazing. I think it has to be there. I've got a whole chapter on that, what I won't go into right now. The same with shared parental leave. There are lots of opportunities out there, but it has to start with mindset. It has to start with mindset. Because if you are coming into parenthood with all the conditioning of your own upbringing, with the expectations of society, with the lack of resource that we now have from our truly amazing NHS, but it can only do so much, with our lack of villages, and you're coming into it trying to still be this best possible version of yourself, there's a really good chance that you're going to try and take a very, very straight path. You need to learn to flex with the path. And it's learning to flex with the path, which is what a lot of us A-types have never had the experience of doing in our working profession. Mm. And that's why I say it's such a period of growth. It's such a period of growth. There's somebody that I've been coaching who is kind of returned. And it's really interesting, you know, the feedback that she gives. Her fear before she went back was saying, I've actually had such an amazing chapter that I'm really nervous of losing who I've become.
Yeah.
And when we pulled that out a bit more and we said, well, what is it you've become now that you weren't before? And let's think about how we hold on to that. And it wasn't just about being a mum or having that closeness with her baby, or, you know, the moments that she's worried she's going to miss, because she's organized a flexible situation, right? She's not going to have to miss them all. Sure, she'll have to make some choices, but it's not as grim as it would have been 10 years ago. But what she was worried about was going back into that A-type classic mold of drive, 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 goal, 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 perfection, perfection, because she knew she was overwhelmed. She knew she was taking joy out of the achievements in work, but not the journey of getting to those achievements. Mm-hmm. And what she learned on mat leave was that she'd learned how to jump around and find opportunity in each moment.
And we could be on this for hours, right? Because there's so many places to go, and that's why your work's so important. You know, so many women think that maternity is a period of losing skill and losing knowledge and getting behind. And really the work you do with your clients is to show them, no, here's what you're going to take back. You're going to take back more open-mindedness. You're going to be more able to delegate. You're going to be more flexible in your thinking. And frankly, you're going to become more discerning, right? I mean, I was talking to a group of women yesterday about time, and this woman effectively saying to me about the time in my career when I went to 4 days a week with no child, right? I just did it because I wanted to. And she said, did you take a pay cut? And I said, yes, I did. And she said, well, I just want to talk about how could you have done that, because that sounds like a compromise. And you're talking about not compromising, which is not quite what I was talking about. But I said, no, I said, because I want to be really clear with you. I also only worked 4 days a week. I said, and I want to say to you right now, because I want you to be really clear about this, most of what you are doing makes no difference. I said, and so I invite you to become more discerning with your time. And I think women that get to do work with you are going to be getting their head around much more discernment about what gets their attention and what doesn't, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that really feeds into the where flexible working is perhaps not doing what it's meant to be doing yet, which is that we talk about how it needs to be about life leave, how it needs to be about everyone having the right to work flexibly so that women don't feel stereotyped for choosing to do so, because the stats make it very clear, you know, they don't progress. So many people don't progress when they return from mat leave. And I do think a lot of that is to do with the perception that, oh, you're part-time, or you're not as committed, or you're working flexibly. Oh, how's that going for you? Oh, we also need as women to stand in our own power a bit more and say, it's bloody brilliant, actually. Not only am I an amazing mom, I am so much more productive. I do boom, 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 and I'm working on this, and it's so exciting. But instead, we play the part. We lean into the parts that other people have created for us. Like, the time is done with that. We don't need to do it anymore. And I think that with flexible working in particular, yes, it needs to be more commonplace, but we also need to own it more. We need to make it very clear it's because we're bringing our whole selves back that we are able to do it flexibly and stop apologising.
Well, you and I have had this conversation before. I think we all forget 9 to 5 is totally made up.
Yeah.
5 days a week is made up. And for some reason now we've made up a world where we think the only way you can get jobs done is if you work a certain time and a certain day of the week. And that's ludicrous, really. But society has molded around that now. And so my experience is, if you said to anybody, would you like to go 4 days a week, have an amazing career and create all the things you want? Most people go, yes, please, thanks very much. In fact, can I go 3, right? So actually, we're trailblazing in that sense, because I think, also we're not, because I'm not a mother, but mothers are trailblazing in that sense if, as you say, they own it.
Yeah, and actually have their boundaries around it. You know, so if you're going, like as you just illustrated beautifully, if you're going to say, I'm going to go back 4 days, do 4 days. Don't do 4 days and every other evening. Don't, you know, actually... And you nailed this very recently when you said, teach other people how you want to be treated. You have to teach people how to treat you, not how to treat you as a stereotype of somebody who's come back to work and therefore we're going to assume that you're not as driven, or that you can't cope so much, or that you need a little less in your plate, or that actually you've come back and you're a real tiger mum and you want more on your plate. Let's not make those assumptions. Let's actually stand up for ourselves and say, let me save you the bother of making an assumption about me. Let me tell you what I want to be able to bring my best self to work, for you to still be able to use up all that amazing talent that I have for you. This is where you're going to get the best out of it. And that's what's going to stop me walking away.
Beautiful. Because often, and I'm sure you experience this, I have women come to me and say, how do I explain a career break? And I'm like, what do you mean explain it? And they say, well, you know, HR, whoever they are going to ask the question. And then I'm going to have to explain why I took a career break. And I'll often say to them, well, why did you take a career break? And they'll say, because I wanted to spend more time with my children. And I say, great, say that.
Yeah.
And then stop talking. Stop talking. There's no requirement to justify that. Huh? It's just like, I wanted to spend more time with my children.
And you know what
we see is an apology that comes straight after it, you know?
Yeah. And this justifying is something that we don't just do in interviews. We do it everywhere. Everywhere, you know, we justify to our partners, we justify to our parents, we justify to the girls at mother and toddler group, we justify to the people that we work with. We are justifying left, right, and center. Always.
Excuse the pun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking of confusing formality.
Oh yeah, life just arrived. But we are in this constant state of assuming that everybody else is doing it better, and therefore feeling like we have to explain our actions all of the time. Mm-hmm. Instead of actually knowing ourselves well enough to say, this is how it works for me. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And that go, that starts in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying pregnancy, but you know, from knowing that you've got a baby coming into your family. Mm-hmm. And also when the baby comes and you're postnatal, you are going to have so many people giving you their opinions. And here's lesson number one in sticking up for yourself when you return to work, or creating a successful system for yourself when you're approaching a return to work. Here comes lesson one. How are you going to state very calmly the decision you've made about how you're feeding your baby, about how you want to respond to your baby when the baby cries, about how you choose to go out and about with your baby, about whether or not you choose to breastfeed or not? How are you having all those conversations? Because I can assure everyone who hasn't thought about it, that what happens is the pattern you're setting there is the pattern you're going to take back to work with you, no matter how confident you were before. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about, you know, 83% of women, professional women, return to work feeling way less confident than they ever did and feeling way more career compromised, you've got the system they created for themselves in that postnatal period, and you've got the system that's put upon them from out there in the culture, in both wider culture and the actual work floor culture. So not, you know, over and above the policy, an organisation can say, we do X, Y, and Z, and we're very supportive of working mums. What is actually happening when she sits down at her desk? What are the actual conversations? What's the interaction if a child is sick? All these different factors all have a part to play in that feeling less confident and feeling less.
But you say there's a whole piece in there around the system you create yourself. It's possible to change that, right? And that's a significant piece in the puzzle. And you know, you'll know because you've worked with me a long time. A lot of the work I'll do with people is you can't change anybody else, but you can change you, right? And so you're doing. So I've got a question for you, just because I know we're gonna. I want to riff on this for a little while, and I know we're gonna run out of time. And sure. I got a million questions, really. What is your take on whether mothers can have it all or not? What's your take on that?
My take on that is, what is your role? Because there isn't a standard line. When we think about can women have it all, we're immediately jumping in our head to the Sheryl Sandberg, Lean In. Now, that was her all. That's fine, but it's not everybody's all. And it depends on your values. It depends what feels most important to you in the world. It feels, what was your journey to pregnancy like? What was your journey to having that baby in your life like? There are so many different factors. And it really depends what sector you're in. It depends what your role was before. It depends what your personal development has been before, what personal development you'd like to have in the future. So you create your own all. You create your own
all. That's going to be conscious.
The right questions at the beginning. You have to do it consciously. It's not going to just happen. It's never going to just happen. And if you say to yourself, I'm going to have it all, but don't put the work in, don't expect to have it all. Because you've not done the work.
And I think what you've shown up today, which is so interesting, is there's a section of the work that you might never be aware needs doing, because everyone's talking about how, you know, how do I bring up this baby to be incredible? And then how do I manage my career? And actually what you're saying is just stop for a minute and let's understand the impact on your body, on your mind, on your sleep patterns, on how you function in the world. And let's get really clear on that, because from there, we have a totally different foundation than if we just turn all our attention to the baby and what does the organization want.
Totally. It's about the scaffold. It's about the scaffold. It's about sitting down. And if you're having your baby with a partner, or whether you've got additional support or you don't have additional support, you know, look at all of that. Look at all of that and dream what is possible, you know. And then I remember you saying to me right at the beginning of me working on all of this and saying, I've been doing this and this is where I think I want to take it. And you're saying to me, tell me what it is you think isn't possible. Let's start there. And that's what we now do with those mums, to say, what is it you think isn't possible? Because then we can work back and see what is possible in your all. What, how can we do this? And yes, there will always be little compromises here and there, but that's what we try and do, see them as little compromises. Mm-hmm. And if something feels too big to be able to accept, if it's too much of a compromise and it's going to cause that resentment, then that's not the answer. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is the kind of the work that you're out there in the world doing in terms of that mindset, But it's about saying, actually, when you're on maternity leave, when you've just had a baby, when you've just welcomed a baby into your home, it is a different kind of work. It's the same rules apply, but we have to read them differently.
It's a different context. And you said right at the beginning, and I wrote it down because I knew I wanted to come back to it. And this is why I think it's so relevant. You said, I go back to my journals because I want to be able to empathize, not sympathize. And I think for each of us who choose to do this kind of work, which is helping people enhance their lives one way or another, this ability to empathize and to walk in the shoes is beyond critical. You know, so often when people come to us and they say there's a gap in Remarkable Women's work, you don't do motherhood, then I say, of course there's a gap, because neither Nick nor I are mothers. And so we lean on people like you who have done the work in that space and have an experience of it, because I can imagine what it would be like, but I've never woken up in the night with a screaming baby and knowing that could be my life for the next 2 years. You know, I've never had that experience. And so... And there are other experiences I have, which I wish were not my life masterclasses, that I know enable me to hold somebody else's hand.
Yeah.
You know, because I've been there, and I'm like, I can feel it in my bones what's going on with you right now, right? And so I really loved what you said in that space, because it takes women like you to say, what if there is an alternative path here? What if there's another way for this to happen? For women to have a different experience of bringing a child into the world, because really what you're doing is you're doing the work to help them form the village and to help them think about themselves, because they'll never do it. And of course, when you become a mother, that's even less likely, right? That you're going to be thinking about you, apart from this kind of resentment that you're talking about, which is there's no permission to speak. And so I just really want to honor that, because I think it's beyond exciting to me that there's an opportunity for at least some women in the world to be with you and to talk it through and to explore the avenues that they might not even think of and to start to set up an entirely different experience. So let me ask you this. If women want to get in touch with you after this podcast, how do they do that?
Oh, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Or Lynn White. I'm just going to spell that for people. So it's, are you, I can't even remember now if you're an E or not. So you spell your name.
No E. So it's just LYNN and White as in the colour. And you can also just pop me an email, which is lynn@talentonleave.co.uk. But you know, I am always here for a chat. It's just, you know, you're saying that these women are privileged to be able to have that support, but I cannot tell you how much of it feels like it's my privilege to deliver it, honestly. And I don't mean that in a twee way or a cringe way. It's just, I just feel it's what I'm here for. It's what I'm here for, and why I've gone through this whole entrepreneurial roller coaster.
That's what life on mission is all about, right?
Yeah.
You, when it clicks on, you're like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know I'm going to have you back for another one, because I also think there's your journey and we haven't really had a chance to explore that today. But what I do know is anyone listening to this, mother or not mother, there's so many real parallels with life without motherhood, and then there's the realities of what that context brings. And so I've written down a ton of gems. I'm really playing with this whole inflexible thinking and what that creates for women, and this whole clear thing that we say all the time about focusing on you, and how this is probably the hardest time ever to do that, but the most critical. And I want to thank you for bringing those lessons to the table. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. Thank
You're
you
welcome. Much.
This was great. I enjoyed it.
Funny that. And just so that anyone listening knows, everybody who comes and does this podcast seems to write to me with, what am I supposed to prep with beforehand? And I'm like, this is your story. You know, this is going to be easy to tell. And of course it was after all that. So thank you for joining us today, Lynn. And thank you to all of our listeners and watchers, because this is available on YouTube and iTunes and Podomatic. If you want to learn more about what Remarkable Women do, then pop along to www.remarkablewomen.co.uk. Click join the clan, or just have a scan through some of our work and see if it feels right for you. I'm Danielle McLeod. I've been talking to Lynn White from Talent on Leave. It's been my real pleasure to host her story with you today.